Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
And this is Music from the Tower. This is your host, John Romeri. And here we are on the beautiful campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove. And this week, we've had a visitor all week. He's been eyeballing everything, and his name is Robert Gallagher, Dr. Robert Gallagher. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is great to have you. I've pressed you into service all over the place. You've been affectionately known as Intern Bob all week long, and you've played for the kids' choir. You've lined them up. You've taken them down in the elevators. You've been at the adult choir. You've been in a choir robe, out of a choir robe. It's fun to have colleagues just drop by and have fun, and that's exactly what we've done all week. We've heard Paul Jacobs. We've heard Isabel Demers. We've just enjoyed music all over Southern California, and it is so great to have you here on the show.
Well, this has been a great experience getting a feel for what you do all week. And I have to say, your choirs are superb. And that beautiful organ in the Arboretum is just a fantastic instrument. So lucky to have an Aeolian Skinner, kind of a rarity in a Catholic parish.
It's an absolute beautiful instrument. We're going to talk about so much today on today's show. We're going to talk about growing up Catholic, as Bob and I both did, but in different generations. So we're going to take a look at what that looked like. But first, let's just get a little introduction into who Bob Gallagher is. He's a longtime friend of mine. We've known each other really probably 20 years.
25.
Maybe even. Okay. Thanks for counting, Bob. We've crossed paths in several places. And so I think we should start at the very beginning, Bob. I do this with a lot of my guests because I think people love to know how somebody of your caliber, and you're going to find out on this show just what a musician we're talking to here today, how anyone comes to music. I'm still astounded how I came to music. I grew up in a little tiny town where probably the music wasn't great in any shape or form. I had a neighbor start me off on the piano and then later introduce me to the organ. She wasn't Catholic. There wasn't any great stuff going on. And somehow I've served four cathedrals. It's unbelievable. Let's talk about little Bob Gallagher growing up in Brooklyn, New York. So what was that like?
Well, I have a sister who studied piano, and Carol's 10 years older than I am. So
did you have piano envy?
I got to listen to her practicing Bach and Chopin, and
wow.
I was inspired by her. She played really well, and she had actually some good teachers for a while, and she enjoyed it. Now, when she went to college, when I was only 8 years old, I didn't get to hear her practicing around the house, but my mom had started me on piano when I was six.
When you were six? Okay.
In first grade.
And was your mom or dad a musician?
Both of them had taken some piano lessons a long time
nothing
ago.
Nothing professional.
But it was nothing they could
okay.
really spend a lot of time practicing.
But they wanted their kids to play music.
They did.
That's excellent. And so you took a little piano. That
took
sounds
piano.
Harmless.
And I had a good teacher, and he even did some ear training. He turned me around on the bench and play notes, and I'd have to identify them.
Wow, on
the
okay.
Scale. But
so
I actually didn't play any classical
teacher.
Music with him. I just
okay.
did.
Just pop stuff?
Canon, Czerny, exercises.
Oh, not pop
music,
stuff, but
and pop music
and pop
until
music.
Fourth grade.
Okay, yeah, we all did Canon exercises. Those are some brutal, nasty, boring exercises that we all did. I don't know why. Hopefully there's some benefit somewhere down the line. Don't know that anybody does any of that anymore. Who knows?
Well, I think actually maybe just I learned a good hand position.
Yeah,
for 4 years
I think
playing
it just
those.
Sort
that
of
it.
Enabled our hands to get going.
Yeah.
When did the organ become part of your life?
Well, we heard the organ at Mass when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
I went to parochial school, so there were 50 of us in a classroom, and there were 200
my
in the grade.
Too. Yes.
Very similar.
Just packed.
Somehow we got out of there knowing things, and we did. We learned a lot. There was a lot of discipline, wasn't there?
Yes.
So
now, did you have the Palmer method for writing?
Yes, we did.
Did you have a good handwriting? My handwriting, everybody goes, wow, your handwriting. Sister and the Palmer method, you know? I mean, that's one of the things I got. I can't spell two words in a row, but I really did. You know, our classrooms were so big, you know, it really was amazing. 1 year, our class was so big, they split about 10 of us off and shoved us into the next grade. You know, I mean, it was just wild. And of course, there was no music going on in my Catholic school. And by sixth or seventh grade, I was making music in our Catholic school. You know, it was crazy.
Well, so we had a music teacher. I remember we had 50 desks in a room, and they were all nailed to the floor. So
No sliding around.
And by fourth grade, we did have different teachers come through to our own classrooms. It would have been too chaotic to go from one room to another for 200 children in a grade. So the teachers would come around, and we did have a music session.
What was the name of your school in Brooklyn?
St. Ephraim.
Okay.
And the parish had a beautiful church with plenty of reverberation and a beautiful cassavant organ, which was played at Mass quite a bit until it was decided that cantor should be at the front and you needed to have an organ. The pipe organ was in the rear gallery. And the rear gallery seated easily over 100 people.
I would guess
150 people. And they had a good solid choir. But for many of the Masses, they used the organ up front, and eventually they sent the choir up front.
It was kind of a funny day in the Catholic world. Now, what years are we talking about here? I don't want you to give your age away.
Oh, I can give my age away. I was in first grade. Well, you'll have to calculate. In 1966, I was in first grade. And by the time I was in third grade and had my first communion, second or third grade, the organ wasn't played at all.
Right.
First communion.
Because things changed, didn't they? You know, it was that time. I was in grade school about 10 years before you, probably. You know, so I still remember the organ, and I still remember. But by the time I got to high school or late grades, you know, more and more folk music, less and less organ. Some piano had entered in, but not much out here in California. It was still just the organ. They were probably just too cheap to buy a piano. But no one had given them a piano yet, you know, one of those deals. But it is interesting. Just a few days ago, I interviewed the new director of music at the Los Angeles Cathedral. And it was very interesting for me to hear that, you know, many of our guests have come to the show and said, oh, yes, I was inspired by the organ in church, or I saw the organ for the first time, or I was so intrigued by this giant instrument, and our organist was good, and he brought me to the organ. You know, he allowed me, if I had a good piano lesson, then I could have a lesson on the organ. You know, but I didn't hear that at all from the new music director there, because he's too young. He's only in his 40s, 41 probably. And so what that meant was, in church, he wasn't hearing the organ at all. He was hearing a piano. And he did play the piano. He does play the piano, but not the organ at all. So there was certainly no place of pride for the organ, as the documents tell us.
Well, it was a really great organ, though. It was installed, I believe, in the 1950s, and it was played at a lot of Masses. How can I help remembering that my first communion and my confirmation were without the organ? Possibly it was a little bit of an exception to the rule. And, of course, I do remember the electronic organ in those later years. Occasionally, when I substituted for their parish organist, I almost always substituted at the electronic organ, which was only a little larger than the organ that my parents bought for our living room. So
yes,
I could
exactly,
practice
exactly. But yet, somehow, even though the loft was the optimal place to sing, from which to sing, you know, it was just so beautiful coming from above. It just made such a glorious sound in these big cavernous spaces. But yet, sticking the choir up front, off to the side with an electric organ, seemed to be the mode of the day. That's what we had to do. We had to stick them over there, even though now there was no real shell for them. Now we had to use mics. We had to do all these crazy things, which you didn't have to do at all in the loft.
Well, you know, I realized that times have changed a lot since the 1960s. Thanks be to God. But I really can't place too much blame on the various priests and nuns who were making the changes, because they needed to do something. They felt they were expected to do something, and they did something. And now,
right. And some of those somethings were, we don't need choirs anymore. You know, that we've got this animator, this cantor, somebody screeching into a microphone. And so some of it was, we didn't need choirs. We didn't need organs. Now we have guitars.
It didn't end up being the case.
Yeah.
I've heard that idea that people were just going to automatically sing. Well, I've been to very few parishes where the Sanctus, or the Holy Holy, is supposed to, is about to begin, and people just break into song. Now I think we're actually getting to that point.
Christ Cathedral is at that point. When our people bust into sing, we can't even intone anything for them. They just come in. You know, you probably experienced that on Sunday. You go to intone the Alleluia, you can't keep them out. They just sing.
That's true.
I mean, and part of that is some of our ethnic folks. You know, the Spanish, the Vietnamese, they just sing like crazy. The English mumble like all good English Catholics. You know,
absolutely. I notice there's still people stand there with their arm, not necessarily here, but just in different places. People still stand there with their arms closed and look around like spectators.
Yeah, it's not their prayer. It's not part of who they are. And they probably do the same thing at a ball game during the national anthem, don't you think? But, you know, we're not really a country that just breaks into song. I don't think there are very many people that go to somebody's party and all gather around the piano and sing songs anymore.
And I'll tell you something funny about that. I was playing in Vienna in 1991. And I was really there to play a recital at the Polish church, which was very proud of being a Polish church at that point in time. And the town where I stayed was about 80 kilometers outside of Vienna. It was really hard to find a place to stay. We had a car rental, but inside Vienna was pretty expensive. So we found a little town way out in the country, and there were chickens walking around outside the church. And we went into the church, and I asked the priest if I could practice a little bit because I did need my practice time, and I was 80 kilometers outside of Vienna. I just wanted to keep up with these pieces, playing the two big Mozart pieces. You have to keep those in your
fingers, oh, yeah,
right?
I got to play them every day.
Yeah. So he said, oh, that would be fine. And after a few minutes, he said, oh, and would you mind playing Mass for us on Sunday? So he got me. I had to play. So I played for Mass, and all I did was give an open. They sang the Schubert German Mass as their liturgy.
Wow.
They sang it for the, they sang the introit. They sang the every part of it in German, obviously. And it was as if somebody was singing one of your greatest pop songs, because all I had to do was barely play a chord on the organ,
and the entire
assembly came in four parts.
Of course they did.
So I think it's true. It's an American culture thing. We just don't participate
in music. It's just not our thing. You know,
like
it's just something that's not based on our, but yet you go to some places and there are singers. You know, you go to certain concerts and there are wonderful people join in. You know, I was just watching a tape of a Barbra Streisand tour. Everybody was singing along with her. You know, so there does happen once in a while. Well, you got a little glimmer there. He's saying he's playing in Vienna. You're going to find out what an amazing musician I'm speaking with here. You've only got a little Catholic reminiscing in this first segment, but we're going to talk a lot more about how Robert Gallagher grew up Catholic and all of the amazing teachers and the amazing pedigree he has. But let's hear him play something. Bob, tell us about this very first piece by one of your teachers, Jerry Hancock.
Oh, this is a great piece. First of all, Divinum Mysterium is a chant that is very close to my heart. Oddly enough, my familiarity with that particular chant began at a very Protestant place, the Chautauqua Festival, upstate New York. I sang in a motet choir there on a daily basis, and we sang of the Father's Love Begotten as an introit, or sort of a choral opening, every several mornings of the week for a little devotional service. So that's how I actually got to know the piece very, very well.
Then you'll hear this wonderful tune in this organ piece by Jerry Hancock. Tell us where you recorded this piece.
So this piece was recorded at the Cathedral in Milwaukee on the Robert Naren organ before its enlargement more recently.
Yes, they've had a new console, lots of things going on there. Great cathedral with Michael Baccio, our friend.
Yes.
All right, here is Robert Gallagher playing a little Jerry Hancock, and we will be right back. You're listening to Music from the Tower on Relevant Radio.
Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Music from the Tower, and we are enjoying a wonderful conversation today with Robert Gallagher. Dr. Robert Gallagher goes by Bob, and he has been spending the week here at Christ Cathedral. Well, we talked a little bit about growing up Catholic in both of our situations. We talked a little bit about Bob coming to the organ in his parish, often the electronic organ stuffed up front on the side. But let's hear really how you progressed from a young pianist who played the organ in church once in a while to one of the great organists in the Americas. Let's hear it.
Well, one of the things that was a deciding factor was that after 10th grade at the prep school that I attended in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, I was given a scholarship that allowed me to study at Chautauqua for the full music school season. It was a generous scholarship given by somebody who really had strong feelings about my prep school, Poly Prep, and Chautauqua, where he had a home. So, and he just passed away.
Now, was this
year.
A summer study?
Summer study.
All the way through the summer.
It's one of those places similar to Aspen.
Yeah, a lot Tanglewood of music festivals have these great things, or Interlaken. Any of those places have organ study. So, is that what you did?
So I had already been studying the organ starting in about fifth grade. I was telling you I grew up at St. Ephraim's, and then I went to this prep school, Poly Prep, and it was there that I heard a very well-played Moeller pipe organ, and the first hymn we sang at the very first chapel service I attended
was... This is amazing that you remember all these things.
I remember how complex and interesting the sound of the organ was while we were singing A Mighty Fortress.
Wow.
Now, they don't do that anymore. Things have changed a lot in secular prep schools. But back then, we had chapel three times a week, and we sang hymns.
Wow.
And we worked a little hard. We worked to make sure we didn't offend people who were not Christians who went to the school. But nonetheless, we sang a lot of hymns. So
and you
I heard
the
this
organ.
Fantastic. Really, not actually fantastic. It was just so much... It felt like it was so much more important singing the hymn at school.
Probably more interesting playing.
Possibly, and it wasn't accompanying anything. You know, a hymn in a church service or in a mass often accompanies some action, whether it's a procession
right.
or something. But we were just singing
in a chapel
it because
service,
we were singing
just
it.
Sing it. Right.
Yeah. So it was great. So I went to my parish organist, and the organist at my school wouldn't teach me. He said that my legs were too short and it wasn't going to work. Now, we all know now, things have come a long way, that you can start students
absolutely
on the manuals,
the touch of the
teach
manuals.
Them about the touch. So I went back to my church organist and I said, can I study with you? And she was very easygoing. She said, oh, sure you can. And then I told her what I was going to study. Basically, she wasn't really too creative about getting me started on things. So I brought in the Clementi Sonata I was working at.
Well, and there probably weren't a lot of books. Like all of our organ scholars here use the Roger Davies book, a beautiful red book with lots of pieces that you can play right into adulthood, right into the casket. And so it's,
you
really can play these pieces all the way. But when I was growing up, I studied with the Stainer book. You know, and there wasn't two songs in there that you could ever play again.
No,
you know?
No, but
or
now the method books
book.
Have come a long way.
Exactly.
And the Stauffer Ritchie book, I
right.
love that book.
Yes.
It has so much interesting information. But back then, I did eventually get the director at my school to teach me the organ, and he was a wonderful, multifaceted man. He had studied organ with John Houston and Robert Baker. He was a great fantastic soloist. He was the soloist at First Presbyterian Church in New York. He is an excellent pianist with tremendous credentials. So, and you do meet a lot of people who have vocal, organ, and piano experience who are good teachers in all those areas.
Yeah.
That's a very common thing. So I was really lucky. I studied with him for a few years.
That is lucky. You know, we take for granted that these people came into our lives somehow. But the idea that you happened upon this school and that you happened upon that teacher and that organist and, you know, and it's a little bit of a lesson for those of us in wonderful jobs like Christ Cathedral and River Road. We haven't even gotten to your church yet. But, how we have to continually look for being that person to someone else, don't we?
And we're very lucky at River Road. We have children who have taken some organ lessons and I've got to nurture that some more. And they're involved with piano, and I like to be part of their lives. Parents, I don't know if you've had this experience, parents come to you and say, we would like to buy a piano. What kind should we buy?
Right, exactly.
Sometimes you go to the place where they're buying the piano and check it
out
for them. Help them out with that. So anyway, he was multifaceted, and he lives in Tennessee now, retired, but he was a major influence. He had a beautiful Bechstein piano in his apartment. Mm-hmm. And he commuted from the way up on the Upper West Side to Bay Ridge, Brooklyn to teach. So he actually lived a few blocks from Riverside Church and had attended many services and been involved at Riverside. That was a little bit of a connection with where I would end up taking my lessons.
Well, do you think that's what pushed you into music as a career? Or was it the summer at Chautauqua? What was it that really pushed you over the edge?
It really was the summer at Chautauqua. My studies with Joe Huffman, my teacher at Poly Prep, were really about discipline. He was a highly disciplined man, and my practicing had to be very carefully worked out. I worked in small sections. Hands alone.
Lots of fingering in the music.
Not all completely fingered, but absolutely
every change, the minimum. Yeah.
Very carefully worked out. Very careful. Even the sort of the zen of playing. He would have me play a phrase and then drop my hands on my lap and think about it and then think before I played the next phrase very carefully.
That's pretty methodical.
It was careful. But it was at Chautauqua when I heard about a 90 rank Moeller organ in the amphitheater at Chautauqua. By the way, ultimately, I would meet Robert Schuller at Chautauqua.
Wow, okay.
Because I was playing, I think, the Floor Painter's aria or something for one of the church services. And as those 5,500 people were gathering at that amphitheater, I went to the back, and this is a little bit out of order, and I said, "Oh, Dr. Schuller, I just had to meet you because I studied with Fred Swan." And he went on and on about how, this was about 1982, he went on and on about how proud he was to have Fred Swan at Crystal Cathedral.
Well, we've had a couple of shows with Fred.
Wide.
Absolutely. You know, one of the greatest organists still of our time, wouldn't you say? The grandfather of the organ, really. He's been everything. He's been the president of the guild. He's played more recitals and dedicated more organs than anyone I know.
He wasn't the grandfather of the organ when I studied with him.
Yeah.
He was only in his 40s or so.
Wow.
And he was in a very special moment of time at Riverside, the late 70s.
And we talked all about that on his show. If you haven't listened, those of you out there who know Fred Swan, if you have not listened to his show, a whole segment is just about his days at Riverside and...
Those were tremendous days.
With Virgil and everyone else.
All the people who drove by dozens and dozens of church steeples and domes and towers to get to Riverside to hear
Fred.
Fred, and he was part of a very inspiring overall program at that church.
Yes, I remember going to Union Seminary. The first thing I did was go to church at Riverside on Sunday to hear Fred play.
Well, you're lucky you went into the building to hear the organ. They say that when Virgil was there were people who were... There were residents who lived in the dormitories or in the residencies at Union, whose rooms were on the back wall of the swell division.
Oh my!
Riverside Church, and so Virgil would be practicing away full organ,
they
and
could
these
hear
poor
them all
people
the time.
Couldn't get any sleep.
Yeah.
Because Virgil was a night owl. I think he practiced most of his work was done after midnight.
Absolutely, I had him play at my church years and years and years ago, and it was all nighttime practice.
Weren't you lucky?
I was.
Those were great days.
I was.
So it was at Chautauqua that I heard beautiful, fantastic church music. I showed up as a 16-year-old, and we're singing the Christopher Tye, "O Come Ye Servants of the Lord" as an introit, and there's great organ music. And my first Sunday that I sang in the choir there, the preacher was Norman Vincent Peale.
Wow. Who also was a frequent guest here at Crystal Cathedral.
Yes, he was. So what an inspiration for wanting to become a church musician.
Yeah.
To have had some background in organ, piano, and singing, and then sit there and see the results, what that does for people in their lives.
Well, I remember the summer was very influential for me, too. For 4 summers in a row, including my freshman year of college, I went to the Pacific Music Camp at the University of Pacific in Stockton. And it was the same thing. You know, it was one thing to be in your little town and, oh, I was a pretty good organist and I was, you know, I had a little church job and I was doing things. But to go there amongst all those other wonderful musicians and to see music making at a much different level than I was making, it was so inspirational. And for some, it's a cause to quit. It's like, oh, I'll never be that. But for me, it was a cause for inspiration. I couldn't wait to go home and practice and learn those pieces. You know, it was great.
Well, you're right. Back at home in Brooklyn, you had homework. You had soccer practice, tennis practice.
There you could just dive in.
You could dive in. You could do much more music and see the value of it. Well, my first summer at Chautauqua, I went there to study organ and piano, And I had plenty of money to spend because the scholarship was so generous. So I had a superb piano teacher who had been on the faculty at Eastman School of Music.
Wow.
His name was Henry Rauch. He was really an excellent teacher. And I was surrounded by fantastic pianists. And then I had a wonderful organ teacher named Nancy Shearer. She goes under Nancy Shearer Ludwig now, and she and her husband live in New England. She was a superb. She had been a student of Alexander McCurdy at Curtis and Charles Kriegbaum at Yale. She studied with McCurdy and John Weaver, your teacher.
My teacher, John Weaver.
She studied with both of them in that transitional period at Curtis. And she was a fine teacher and such a kind person and so nurturing. I hope she listens to your show because...
Well, you'll have to send her a link.
She did a great deal for me and made a big difference in my life. Her gentle, kind, thoughtful attitude towards her students and her way of encouraging you to work without putting tremendous pressure on you. So at Chautauqua, you had to sign out your practice time. So I managed to take 4 hours organ practice a day and 3 hours piano practice.
Wow.
And learned a lot of music that summer. And once you learn some of the great music, I think I learned the Reger Benedictus.
You're hooked.
That summer. You are in the first movement of the E minor trio sonata, which we heard Paul Jacobs play on Sunday.
Yeah.
And once you have enough time to spend with beautiful music like that, then you are hooked. It's what you want.
Yeah, there's got to be something in you to lead you to that, and the people to lead you to that. But there's nothing like having a, you know, even we had our organ scholars there Sunday listening to Paul Jacob, and, you know, not that they could ever attempt at this stage any of those pieces, but to know them and to have heard them in live performance, there's nothing like it.
I agree with you. Well, even not even live. Well, live. I'll give you an example of live performance. I used to tune into WRVR in New York, which was the Riverside Church radio station, and you could hear some of the broadcasts of the services. And I can still remember, like it was yesterday, hearing Fred Swan open up the Bach G major as one of his opening pieces before the service. But then, when I got my dad to drive me up to Riverside to hear him play a recital, and I can still, Fred laughs that I remember these things. I can still remember him opening that recital with the Reger D minor toccata, Opus 59, the thrill, and closing the recital with the Passacaglia from Sowerby's Organ Symphony.
Wow, imagine.
Absolutely
imagine.
Stunning.
Yeah. In that instrument, in that room. And that man playing it. Well, I think it's time for this man to play something else for us. Let's move on to a little improv on Haig Dias. How about that? And guess where he played this piece?
Thank you, John. Yes, I recorded this at St. Louis Cathedral. There were five of us who had gathered to perform at NPM conventions and create a sort of an organist cooperative, which we called the Liturgical Organists Consortium. And I have to thank Virgil Funk for helping us get started, and also Peter Baugh, who is a wonderful, wonderful tour director, for supporting us through that. And so there were five of us, myself, Allison Ludecky, Jim Kosnick, Mary Beth Bennett, and Lynn Trapp.
And, of course, Allison Ludecky, many of our Southern California listeners know as an organist right here in La Jolla. So,
and we really enjoyed taking the opportunity to present some of the great organ works to the NPM convention attenders.
Yes, the Liturgical Organist Consortium sounds like a bunch of church organists who can't play much. But these were some of the best players anywhere in Catholic circles. It was just amazing. Tell us just in 2 seconds about this piece.
Well, we came to your cathedral for all of us to record a beautiful album called Divinum Mysterium. And this piece was originally improvised by Pierre Cochereau at Mass on Easter at Notre Dame.
And later written down.
And the rule for playing this piece is just play as fast as possible. And clean as possible.
And this is Robert Gallagher playing as fast and clean as possible on the incredible Kilgan organ at the St. Louis Cathedral. This is Music from the Tower, and we will be right back with so much more. enjoying music from the tower right here from our wonderful campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove. And we've been enjoying a program with Robert Gallagher, one of the real great organists of our country. And we're going to certainly talk about where he is now. We barely got you out of high school here. But let's talk about your two great teachers, Fred Swan and Jerry Hancock. So you decided to go into music, and you went to the Manhattan School of Music. Let's hear about that.
Well, I was studying in high school. I'm sorry, I'm back in high school.
We're not going to get out of high school, Bob. I can't get this kid out of high school.
But my regular teacher in high school was a former student of Fred Swan. His name is Arnold Ostlund. And I took my lessons at Plymouth Church of the Pilgrims, which was a famous, is still a very well-known congregational or United Church of Christ church in Brooklyn Heights. And I took my lessons on a beautiful Aeolian Skinner organ. Mm. Arnold was a superb teacher.
As beautiful as ours here in the Arboretum.
Yours is a very
Oh, it's magnificent.
I'm very envious.
We are so lucky.
Oh, it's a beautiful instrument. So, and it's a vintage. The 1951
right. It's the perfect vintage.
Wonderful year. But anyway, I studied with Arnold, and I sang in his choir. What a great experience singing Verdi Requiem conducted from the console.
So you're still in high
Gloria.
School.
Oh, sorry.
Experiencing
things. He was a great teacher, and he had studied with Fred Swan.
So did he encourage you to go to Manhattan?
No, he encouraged me to go get a general kind of an undergraduate degree. But frankly, I was just so inspired by both Arnold and by Fred Swan, that I left high school a year early to go to Manhattan. So I never applied for a regular college. I went straight to music school and actually commuted from home to Manhattan. So it was a long commute, but it was fine. And I had a practice organ at home and a church job where I could practice like we all did.
Yes, so, exactly.
There were only two or three people at Manhattan who seemed to be glued to that whole camp practice organ for all of their practicing because they might not have had a church job. But the rest of us had
didn't,
a place to practice. So Fred was a great teacher. What I loved about him, and I actually wrote him a note telling him this, is that he gave us a very good sense of style. Now, this is back in 1977, and not everybody knew everything yet about how to play.
No, we've talked on the show, too, about musicology and how it's advanced. You know, when I was still in the late 60s, early 70s in college, we were still putting fermatas on Bach cantatas, thinking that meant hold, pause and hold. There was a lot of scholarship yet to be learned, and we were sort of on the cusp of it in the early 70s. But by the end of the 70s, it was coming along, but not there yet.
Not there yet. So we were slurring upbeats over the bar line.
Yeah, all sorts of funny little things
like that
that we've learned by performance practice, really, and also seeing these organs, seeing a historic organ. We had just barely begun to do that in the 60s and early 70s with, E. Power Biggs dragging microphones out to see and hear organs. But now, of course, we can hear any organ play anything, anywhere.
We're very lucky. So, since you couldn't do that, Fred had to be your link to those organs, and he was very, very good at explaining to us how you could make Bach or Mozart or Franck, how you could connect those composers with their instruments. He was excellent at teaching us style. He did not like excess, and that was good too, especially as a student. If you're starting off being a little bit flamboyant in your interpretation, and somebody doesn't rein you in, you can explode by a certain time and no sense of parameters about how you play a piece of music. And I feel I think Fred probably felt this way too. The organ should have some connection with the composer. You have to work with the organ so that you make the organ sound its best within the framework of what music you're playing. And he was very good at that. He did that when he performed places. And
Fred is certainly one of the few performers that you hear him play a piece and you think, well, that was exactly right.
Yes.
You don't think, well, that was a little odd, or that's a little out of performance practice, or that's a little this and that. Every time I've ever heard Fred play anything, you think, well, that was just exactly right. He's just one of those players.
I keep running back to his major chorale performances when I play Franck. I have to go back and just refresh my memory of some of the beautiful, thoughtful things he does with the music and how his pacing works and all that.
One of the great teachers, and how lucky we were here at Crystal Cathedral to have him all those years. And also to have him as a consultant for Hazel. Without Fred, we probably wouldn't be thinking about reinstalling Hazel. We'd be thinking about what wonderful Alan is coming in and how much money we made from selling all those pipes. You know,
well, he's
I mean,
so knowledgeable.
He was
so
instrumental in steering the Catholic Church to keeping Hazel and making it an important part of our campus.
Well, he's so a, he's an easy man to take seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Because
and he's very serious. You know, I mean, when it was time to have the second console considered, you know, when we moved the choir placement and we decided we did want the second console, he wrote a beautiful two-page typed letter why it's important that we have that console. So I could yap on for weeks.
We both could.
Yeah.
we got to move on, but we're in the fan
really,
club.
He really, you know, with just succinctly was able to explain why we needed that and why it was an important thing for the cathedral and the music program here. So how lucky we were. So 4 years at Manhattan.
We students just loved him, too. We're all in touch with each other still, all of us who graduated around that time.
Mm.
And we still look back and cherish those memories of the time we spent at Manhattan School of Music studying with him. It was really great. It was a great school, and he was a great teacher. And he really resurrected that. I wouldn't say resurrected. He really jump-started that program. From the beginning, really. There wasn't much to...
And did you have your lessons at Riverside?
We had our lessons at Christ Chapel at Riverside, which was a very complete three-manual Austin organ. You know, a public building like the Riverside Church...
Yeah, it would be a little hard to have lessons.
No, and get your practice time and praise. It would be a waste of time. So most of us played our senior recitals, as did I, at Riverside. But we took our lessons.
Lucky.
We were lucky.
And then you went on to the Juilliard School.
Yeah, what happened is, you know, Fred had wanted me to go to Northwestern or Eastman, and I didn't like the cold weather, and my father was older. He was an older dad. He was 55 or so when I was born, and I just didn't want to go that far away or be that cold. So,
in that order?
I'm not sure. And I had a church job in New York, and I liked my church. So there were.
And what church was that?
Well, at the time, I was at a Presbyterian church called Union Church at Bay Ridge. We used the worship book, that Presbyterian hymnal.
Yes.
And it was a fine job. It was very close to my parents' home. In fact, it was across the street from my best friend's house from high school. But it was a good church. It was we had staff singers and a tradition of very fine music, but room for growth. So I did like that church. So I didn't want to leave that either. So what happened is one day I was waiting for the bus to go down to Patelson's, which I missed. We all
a wonderful music store in New York, which is no longer there, I'm sorry to say.
The store. Yeah.
We
the
all
city's
went
still there.
All of us went there.
So I went to – I usually took the subway, but it was so freezing cold this January day in 1981, I decided to take the bus. But the bus stopped and stopped and stopped for every possible reason. And finally, around Lincoln Center, I got fed up. And I walked outside, thought, maybe I'll apply to Juilliard. I just happened to stare at the school and think, maybe that would be a good idea.
You never know.
Not sure what's coming next.
What you're
life.
Being led to. Yeah.
So
exactly.
I went in, got an application. They said, by the way, this is due in about 3 days. So I had to really rush to get the audition ready, which was within a week or so of my senior recital with some different repertoire.
Oops.
So there was a lot of work to do. But I was fortunate, and I got in.
And with whom did you study there?
And a few weeks after my acceptance letter, I received a letter telling me that Jerry Hancock was being appointed to the faculty for the following semester. I had met Jerry Hancock at Chautauqua that first inspiring summer.
Wow,
and played for him.
Okay.
So we knew each other.
You're connecting all the dots here.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
of course,
so
Jerry Hancock was the organist and choir master at St. Thomas Church on Fifth Avenue, one of the probably the most prestigious Episcopal church in the country.
Yes. And we were fortunate actually to take all of our lessons in St. Thomas.
Wow.
With the exception, we got close to our juries. We did have some lessons in the recital hall at Juilliard.
At Juilliard.
But otherwise, it was much better for Dr. Hancock to just stay on campus, as it were, stay
we were
at St. Thomas.
So lucky
lessons.
That he came to the choir college and did our improv classes, you know, and it was like a miracle. You know, I was so excited to have him for improv.
And the other miracle was that he taught improv at Juilliard, so I got to take that class during my master's time. And also he taught a church music class. So we talked about hymn treatments, the whole, everything he does,
we just got
from him. So it was really great. Now, occasionally, this is a, you know, human interest story. We would walk together from one place to the other as he had to go from St. Thomas to Juilliard or the other direction. And you never went in a straight line up to Juilliard from St. Thomas. You practiced something called lightsmanship. And maybe some other people who knew Dr. Hancock will find this amusing. So you never stopped at a red light as you were walking. If you came to a red light on Fifth Avenue and 55th Street, you didn't cross the street, you made a left. And you'd go to the next corner and you took the green light. And somehow, eventually, you might have to give it up and wait for a light. But we never took the same route because it depended on whether...
On the lights.
Lightsmanship. I'm sure the boys at St. Thomas got a kick out of that and think, well, splendid, we'll be practicing lightsmanship today.
Oh, gosh. What a great man. And how much we learned from these great teachers, Fred and Jerry. How lucky, lucky you were. We're going to hear a little bit of a piece from your choir now. We have not talked about your parish at all. We'll do that in the final segment, your church. And so tell us about this piece.
Well, you have a fantastic organist and composer right here in the Los Angeles area, Craig Phillips, and this is a piece by Craig Phillips. It's one of his most beautiful anthems. He's done some great compositions, and this is my choir from River Road Church in Richmond, Virginia.
And the title?
The House of Faith Has Many Rooms.
And this is Robert Gallagher playing and conducting?
Yes.
Excellent. We will be right back. We have so much more to talk about here on Music from the Tower. This is Relevant Radio. To our final segment with Robert Gallagher. Bob has been telling us all about his wonderful study with Fred Swan, with Jerry Hancock, and all of a sudden, now you're off to Europe to do a little study, right?
Well, yes. After I studied with Jerry, I went to Europe to a master class with Marie-Claire Alain in the town of Saint-Donat, where she actually recorded some of her second of three complete Bach cycles of organ works. And it was a wonderful course, met some fantastic organists from all over the world, including several people I'm still in touch with from way back in 1983. And during that time, I found out that many people were there really as an audition to study with her at some point.
Kind of like to prep up to be a whole year student. Yeah.
Well, she would find out whether we were worthy.
Nah.
So,
were you worthy, Bob?
So I asked her, and she said, with her beautiful French accent, oh, yes, so we have time, but you have to wait. So I waited till 1985.
So you had two years to wait for an opening.
Fortunately, during those 2 years, I had been assigned a teaching fellowship at Juilliard in the theory department, what they called Literature and Materials of Music, wow. L&M. So I spent a lot of time reviewing. Obviously, you learn when you teach. So I taught some classes. I spent a certain amount of time at the copier helping professors. Like you've been calling me intern Bob here.
Yes, well, see, you had training for that right from the start.
I had training for that right there at Juilliard.
Excellent.
So that's what I did there.
So after your year with Marie-Claire, you came back to this country, and then where'd you land?
And started a doctorate at Catholic University.
Wonderful.
A DMA, was accepted in the DMA program.
Which is a doctorate of musical arts?
Doctorate of musical arts, yes. But during that time, I was so inspired, actually, by some of the musicology courses that I asked if I could possibly switch to a PhD musicology program.
Wow.
So I was given a full scholarship for 3 years I took an exam. It was a GRE exam, graduate record exam. And you were competing with engineers or architects.
Yeah,
and they gave out a dozen or something like that, to PhD candidates in the whole school. I was fortunate to get one of those. So at the same time as I was making the transition from DMA to PhD, I auditioned at St. Matthew's Cathedral under the recommendation of some folks at Catholic University.
As the organist,
cathedral organist.
Full-time.
365 or more masses a year.
I'm certain.
We had a lot of daily mass. And so I auditioned. Part of it was improvisation. And while I was in France studying with Marie-Claire, I also took improvisation with Jacques Tadei, who ended up being the organist of St. Clotilde, Franck and Tremere, and Longley's church. And he was a very good improvisation teacher, really taught us.
He's a very good improviser.
Liberate
I heard him improvise
ourselves.
Several times.
Very inspired improviser and a snazzy dresser.
Well, I met you the very first time when you were at St. Matthew's. That's where our paths first crossed, that you were the organist there. And many times after that, we even roomed together at some conferences and things. It was wonderful. But later on, you left the cathedral and went on, after you finished your doctorate at Catholic U, you went on to the Philadelphia area.
Well, we're a little out of order. Actually, I did not complete my doctorate while I was at St. Matthew's. It was actually almost impossible.
Too much work.
To be a full-time doctoral student. I completed all my coursework, did my comps in theory and in history, and completed them successfully. But getting through the dissertation was time-consuming because I picked a tricky topic. It was Planchant Musical, which is composed chant in the 17th century.
You know, even our listeners who are meeting you for the first time on the radio are not the least bit surprised by that, Bob.
So I was focusing on a couple of chant books written in the 1660s by Niebuhr.
Of course you were.
And I actually presented some papers, and I've written the article, I've revised the article in the New Grove Dictionary on that subject, but I have not written a 700-page dissertation on it.
Okay.
So I had about three chapters written, and I ended up moving back to the DMA program and completing it rather quickly, but not until I had already left St. Matthew's. I was playing at Wayne United Methodist Church. I'd moved
which
to there.
Which is in a suburb of Philadelphia.
So that's when I finished, in the year 2000. And I was very proud to have those extra letters because I did put a lot of time into it. And I almost did two degrees.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah, one dissertation might have finished it off, but it just wasn't possible. I have to admit that if I reach a point where I'm not playing the organ as much or involved as we both are in so much church music, I would like to write some more about that topic because it's very interesting.
Yeah. And so you were at Wayne United Methodist. And then by the time I moved to Philadelphia in 2010, you had moved over to St. David Parish.
I was the assistant organist at St. David's Church in Wayne, Pennsylvania. And I think the most exciting thing that happened, two exciting things happened there. We got a new Dobson organ.
Beautiful
which is
instrument,
one of the
which
most,
you showed me right away on moving
well,
there.
People have come to see it, and St. Thomas has a Dobson because of coming to see, John Scott came to St. David's to see that instrument. And Washington Cathedral was pursuing Dobson because of that instrument. And
it's a beautiful organ.
It's a great organ. Merton College, Oxford has a Dobson because of the St. David's organ.
Wow.
It's a beautiful instrument. They're very lucky to have
it. Well, and they were very lucky to have you as the organist there for all that time.
Well, the thing that was the most noticeable thing that took place was we built up the youth choir there. That was my ballywig.
Your
was
charge.
Yeah. My charge was that youth choir. And we eventually got it up to 60 singers, and we eventually brought we had a second youth choir, the Youth Chamber Choir. And we took most of those young singers to England for a tour of cathedrals singing evensongs.
Isn't
and,
great?
And Eucharist.
And I know you combined with other churches, the Wayne Presbyterian Church. You had big things where these people were combining youth choirs.
Even that was in after my time.
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah. But even in my day, they were combining these gigantic youth choirs together and just doing great things.
We were fiercely beautiful. Independent while I was there.
Oh, okay.
No, I love my colleagues at Wayne Presbyterian. It's a great group. They're all the people
yes,
who work there.
We did
really
a lot
hard
of
work
at that church.
Very involved.
For the Organist Guild there. By the time I've seen you again now, it's been about 5 or 6 years since I'd seen you. You are now in Virginia. Tell us about that wonderful parish. We heard the choir just a few minutes ago. That was the chancel choir of that church.
We have several choirs at this church. It's called River Road Church, and its official
River
name
River Road Church,
Baptist.
Baptist.
That's right. It is
okay.
Not called River Road Baptist Church. It is called River Road Church, Baptist. Now, to be a little smug, we like to say that we're a church first and Baptist second.
Okay.
When the church was instituted in 1946, and it started with meetings at the Greek Theater at University of Richmond.
How about that?
They decided that it was important that they not have to necessarily report to the Presbytery or a Methodist bishop or any of that. They wanted to develop an ecumenical church, but they did not need to link themselves to a denomination, so they chose the Baptist Church.
And tell us about your choirs and your program there. You're the organist and the choir director.
I am. And it's possible where I'm seated at the organ to conduct from
to
the console.
Both, yes.
And I enjoy that because that is something Fred Swan taught us to do.
Well, and it's something we all did. You know, this is the first church, really, I've been a stand-up conductor solely. Right. Because of the placement of the organ it's so far. You know, I can't wait to get Hazel over there so I can play and conduct again. I miss it.
I know. I love watching those videos of Hazel being played in the old days.
Oh, when Fred
putting
came
up
here,
his arm and the choir coming in precisely from memory.
From memory.
Wow. But anyway, we have a multiple choir program and wonderful facilities. We're very fortunate. We have this organ that was just rebuilt by Emery Brothers.
And big concert series.
Originally a 1970 Moeller organ. We have a substantial concert series. In fact, part of the reason I'm here is because I'm so much in admiration of how you run your concert series, and I'm here to learn.
We're just scratching the surface here at Christ Cathedral, but, you know, we have the hopes of building a big one. I've built a big one at a few other cathedrals, and, you know, this place of all places I've been certainly deserves a great one.
Well, I'm learning from you. So we have a multiple choir program, and we're fortunate, aside from this instrument, we have beautiful acoustics, slate marble floors, beautiful architecture, Corinthian columns. It's a large church, seats between 850 and 900, and we have really fine preaching, and we have just had three of our pianos rebuilt, completely restored and rebuilt, and in addition to another piano that's
And your choir's off to a residency soon, another trip.
We have already been to Canterbury for a week in 2014, the Baptist church that sang at the Anglican Cathedral.
Wow, how about that?
Many of us went, maybe around half of our choir was able to go on this trip. We didn't do a fundraiser, so people had to really save their pennies.
Yes.
And we worked really hard.
We do the same.
Now, this time around, we're looking to go to Bath as our main hub and branch out to other cathedrals.
It's a gorgeous cathedral.
So
my choirs have sung there. It's just an absolutely beautiful place.
Really, really.
And the city is beautiful. Well, this has been a fascinating visit with one of America's top organists. We're going to hear you play one more piece before we sign off. A wonderful piece by my grand teacher, Jean Langlais. Was he your grand teacher too? Did you study with Langlais?
Oh gosh, I took one lesson. Marie-Louise Langlais came to Richmond to give a course, and after the course was over, she actually allowed me to drive her over to River Road, and she gave me a lesson on the Franck Fantasy in A.
Okay.
And pulled out her copies of the original manuscript and all of this. So I have studied. I am a grandbaby of Longer, but just on that one.
And tell us about this piece. It's a piece for Palm Sunday.
Well, a lot of things to be proud of with this piece. It's another Organist Consortium recording that it comes from. It won a Golden Ear Award when it came out because of Ed Kelly's fantastic sound engineering. It's played on a beautiful, Lively Fulcher organ, which finally inspired the Archdiocese to allow us to use Lively Fulcher
At
the Cathedral
of St. Matthew.
Yes, we've been some difficulty with some organ builders, and when they saw what a beautiful job Lively Fulcher had done at St. Patrick's in the city, they went on to sign a contract to get that organ underway.
That may be a new name for organ building out there in Radio Land, but we are getting one at our beautiful Our Lady Queen of Angels in Newport Beach. So we're so excited about that coming to Orange County. Well, here's a piece by Jean Langlais. Tell us the title.
So it's Les Rameaux, the Palms, and it's a sort of frantic-sounding piece. At least the opening fugal section is very tremendously exciting. But when the pedal comes in, it's basically that beautiful Palm Sunday chant that is emphasized in the big reeds in the pedal.
In the big reeds in the pedal.
All notes in the pedal.
This has been Music from the Tower. We've been enjoying a great visit with Robert Gallagher here, who's been on our campus for the week. It's just been absolutely wonderful to have you here with us and in the studio as well. Thank you, Bob, for doing a show with us. And until the next episode of Music from the Tower, I encourage you to go out and hear some fabulous music in live performance. Don't miss out. And we'll see you next time on Music from the Tower. This is Relevant Radio, and this is your host, John Romeri. Thanks for listening.